Let me bring in our hypnotist, Marshall Silver.
It's Marshall Silver, ladies and gentlemen, the world's fastest hypnotist.
We're live. You know, that's the thing I was just saying when you couldn't hear me is this is called Marshall Silver Live. And the reason you couldn't hear that is we're live. And I didn't know that you couldn't hear me. Glad you're with me. We've got an exciting show for you today. We've got a couple of guests that are going to blow your mind on Marshall Silver Live, keyword live. We're going to discuss digital marketing with Maverick Lopez and Nick Nelson, the forces behind Aruza Marketing. As VP of sales and co-owner, Maverick has played a pivotal role in catapulting Aruza to success with over $11 million in sales while mentoring students to achieve six-figure incomes through innovative marketing strategies. Alongside him, Nick Nelson's visionary leadership has helped position Aruza as a standout in the marketing industry. Listeners today are going to get an insider's look at the strategies that have driven Aruza's success for so very, very long. We're also going to dive into personal finance, real estate investing, career growth in the financial sector, and you'll find everything that's happened inside of this process to be massively powerful. Without any further ado, please welcome to the platform, Maverick Lopez and Nick Nelson. Welcome to the show.
What's going on? Hey, love
it's
you.
It's all good. Everything happening this morning is exactly what happens in live shows from time to time. My deepest apologies. Nick and Maverick, very glad to have you here. Where are you guys calling in from?
So we're currently coming in from Dallas, Texas.
Yep.
Awesome. When everything locked down, there were two states that massively favored, in my opinion, a place to move to. One was Texas. The other one was Tennessee. I ruled out Florida. I don't like hurricanes. I don't like bugs. And I'm not a huge fan of massive humidity. Mm. And ultimately, we decided to stay in Vegas, tough it out while the idiots were making stupid decisions politically. And right now I'm on the beach in San Diego. So glad you guys are here. Welcome here. And let's talk a bit about your business. Tell me about what you guys do.
So it's actually in the sector of door-to-door sales. So it was something that we started while we were actually in college. So we started selling door to door.
So I got to ask a big question. Are you guys Mormon?
No.
Alrighty. So that would have answered everything, you know, as far as developing a door to door sales company. That would have made a lot of sense. But so you guys took the hard path. You did it not because you had to. You did it because you wanted to. Mm-hmm. So tell me more.
Yeah. So we were both just hungry college students. I think just like the natural student that's like craving more, that's just constantly, you know, researching how can I make as much money. We started to realize that, well, I'll let Nick speak because he started with a different program and that's kind of where the story starts. And then work our way into how we ended up meeting. I think that's a good.
Yeah. So going to college, material science engineer, University of Florida, strictly just because I was good at math and science. And my counselor was like, you should do this. You'll make a good amount of money. And I came from a broke background. I was like, that sounds like a great idea. Someone went into a classroom and they were like, average intern makes $8,000. You gain communication skills and all these skills that I wanted to become this person that I wanted to be that I didn't have. So I was like, I don't care what it is. I need the money and I need that stuff to become the person I want to be. So I went out to Mississippi, sold educational books door to door. Ended up killing it. I was the number 22 person out of 2,500, not because I had the skill, but because I outworked literally everyone around me. I was working like 90-hour weeks from 7 a.m. to 9:30, just grinding on doors. Pest control, which is, it was dominated by Mormons for sure. I got reached out to on Facebook And I was like, well, that sounds way more profitable than selling educational books because everyone has bugs. There's a way bigger need for it. Ended up doing that. Realized we were super good at it. That was Maverick's first summer. I was paying out of state tuition at the University of Florida. It was just bad financial decisions. So I ended up transferring to school with him at Texas Tech, where he was a cheerleader, because I got in-state tuition when you have a scholarship over $1,000. I was like, this just makes sense. We then went balls deep, if I can say that.
You just did.
There we go.
It's a little bit too late now. Let's keep it going.
Right. Into this business, switched my majors around. We ended up building sales teams with 150 students before we even graduated college, making $150,000. While still in college in 3 to 4 months. And then we kind of saw the dream. We're good at sales. It's really just the business of developing people, developing leaders. And we, it's something we're super passionate about in helping individuals kind of achieve what we've done in helping in that way. So we've been doing that the past 8 years.
Ultimately, I think the top thing was just, we figured out that what we wanted at the top was just money, time, and freedom. Then we had to kind of right below that, we had to figure out, well, how do we do that? And we were like, okay, let's study finances and how the world works. And then underneath that, we were like, okay, so we have to leverage our time. We have to figure out how much ROI can we get per unit of time. And then working from there, we were like, okay, so we need to spend most of our time in sales and marketing. So that's kind of how we got down to that, because then we started to realize the way a business functions, we're like, the maintenance of the business is typically you're trying to fix the cost. You're going to pay a lot of money for the growth of the business. And so I think once we started to realize that, we're like, hey, we need to learn the skills that grow a business, not just what maintains it.
I am always fascinated by people that build sales organizations, because my own belief is that sales are the cornerstone of the economy, that mm-hmm. they are the bedrock. And when, obviously, when sales are doing well, the economy is doing well. And when sales aren't doing well, the economy over everything suffers for that. And so the idea of creating organizations that people love to be a part of is just magic to me. I remember when I was a teenager, Apple computers and Microsoft were just being born. And so there were a lot of books being written about their successes. And one of the things that I loved the most were stories about how people would live in their cubicle at their office for weeks on end, eat pizza, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, sleep under their desk, all because they believed in a cause. Tell me about how much of that goes into building a sales organization, particularly with a group of people, frankly, that have a very short attention span, college students.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. And then I want to hear all about your cheer career, Maverick.
Yeah. It's really funny because when you think about door to door, it's like about the grittiest thing you can do. I mean, we're talking base learning confidence through rejection and then learning how to figure out who you are unwavering, right? I almost kind of gave that definition to confidence, was it's your ability to know who you are on such a deep level that you can face any rejection and it doesn't have you question who you are because you can just move forward in whatever it is that you're chasing. So in sales in general, we started to realize that. So we're like, okay, so we can set a goal of what we're trying to do, and then we need to figure out a way to get there and then kind of remove the fears from the equation. And I think the hardest thing is teaching that mindset to other people. But for us, we kind of backed ourselves into a corner because we sold with Aptiv, which is the first company, learned the skills, the base foundation skills, went to a company called Hawks. Those are both Mormon-based companies. So we've met.
Knew there was a connection there.
Yeah, we've definitely had a
fair share of Mormons. No, I'm envious. I think of all the things that religion does for people, the best thing that the Mormon religion does, and there's a couple other religions that do the same thing, is send their people out door to door. Because I would agree, mm-hmm. regardless of whether you're selling for God or you're selling Cutco knives, that experience of knocking on doors and being rejected and knocking on the next door and busting your butt from 6 a.m. till 9:30 at night, that is character changing. That's not just a good living. And again, I've had some Cutco salespeople that I swear that if they're not billionaires now, they're going to be billionaires because they mastered that such important skill set so very well. So forgive me for jumping up and down with excitement that you guys work for a Mormon company.
No. I think it's cool because it wires your brain like a certain way. And so it's like, there's a specific wiring of like your brain that you need to be able to think correctly almost, if that's, you know, that's kind of a strong way to put that. But there's like a correct way to think in order to reach things. But We then moved into our third year where we had this small company reach out to us, and it was like, hey, if you guys do the same thing that you did with your team at Hawks, we'll give you 33% equity in a branch. So we were playing the equity game now, not necessarily just taking, you know, what's called in marketing like an override, right, on the whole sales organization as a whole for bringing the value. It was like, instead, you're going to get equity. We're going to pay you nothing on the team. All of your personal commission is going to be you digging yourself into a negative hole until the branch breaks even. And then once it breaks even, you have to then pay the commission that you paid yourself. So
you're saying you were offered a pretty crappy deal.
It was a bad deal. It's funny because we look back at it and we laugh because we're like, dude, we just had no clue. I mean, we were like 20 years old and we were just looking for an opportunity.
And young and dumb and looking for some.
We look at that now. We look at that opportunity. We're like, they had all the upside with no downside. I was like, that's how they structured that. I was like, they had all the upside. So super smart for them. And I take full accountability. I signed the papers. I was looking for an opportunity. So I think it was, I mean, it worked out the way it was supposed to. So we backed ourselves into a corner because if this is also a piece of the deal, we had to do $600,000 in revenue with that team or else we lost all the equity. So that was another.
Well, all I can say is, yeah, you can say the word balls as much as you want because apparently you have some.
Yeah, yeah. that's why. I mean, we backed ourselves into a corner. So we ended up in college the last half of the semester. We were knocking dorms just like we knocked to sell pest control, selling the opportunity of the internship program, which is the way that we structured and marketed it to learn communication skills, negotiation, that kind of stuff. So we were knocking dorms with donuts, Krispy Kreme donuts, knocking, saying the pitch, I have a marketing internship program. I'll give you guys a donut and we can kind of go over the program and see what you think. We were doing that. I was going in front of classrooms at Texas Tech. We'd pass out these cards that had first name, last name, interest level, and then their email. We'd pass it out as they were walking in. And then I would go to the front of the classroom. At the point, we actually had a third business partner, but I would go to the front and with a strong downtone to the teacher, I would say, hey, I'm with the school. I run a marketing internship program. I'm going to do a quick presentation. Is that cool? Super assumptive. So then it was Cameron, which is our third partner at the time, would run the presentation and then Nick would be in the back.
So let me be clear on this. Yeah. Let me be clear on this. You didn't originally have permission from the instructor to go into their class and do this pitch to recruit salespeople, but you acted with confidence as if you did.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you tie a training internship into the school?
So we actually put our name in with Higher, it was called Higher Red Raider, so that we had at least some sort of ground to stand on. So that was the ground that we were standing on.
So that sounds like a roundabout way of saying no.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would say hard answer no, but if they did a little bit of digging,
dude,
yes.
Guys, I love you. I didn't know much about you, but I love you already. I just love the tenacity and the just that power. It's so sexy. It's such a powerful thing. It's so charismatic for people to just say, we're grabbing this by the horns. This is what's going to happen. So tell me more. You're in front of the class. You saved yourself a box of donuts, and now you're closing one to many instead of going to the door to door. Tell me what happened in the classroom.
Well, we were presenting to it, obviously, like what you're saying, we were having a bigger platform at that point. So we were like, we can collect a lot more leads. And I think that was like a different way that we kind of structured the strategy in our head. So,
and that, what you just described, that idea of going from one to one, you know, knocking on dorm room doors with a donut and getting in front of the classroom where they're required to pay attention. They're not, you know, hitting the bong and watching the, you know, TV or whatever they're doing. That's brilliant. That right there alone had to have multiplied the business 50 times over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We ended up hiring a kid out of a classroom. It's so funny. He ended up quitting. So he almost quit his first 3 days. But then that summer ended up being one of the top rookies. He sold like $160,000 worth of pest control, came out a second year, did 1.6 million pest control sales. And then him personally, he sold 330,000. So by the time he was a junior, he was making like 170K in college. And so I remember that was one of the biggest success stories where we really got more conviction, because that's also what it is. It's like you gain this experience and then you build more conviction for it. And you're a lot more bought in on the mission that you're at, like the purpose. But yeah, I mean, I would say that was like the main kind of stepping stones kind of into that. And then as we've kind of grown, we are now reaching into more online stuff to try to build a bigger platform. I'm starting to understand a little bit more about leverage in different situations. So I'm like, we've learned the sales skills and how to communicate well. And I'm like, now we can start using that to a broader scale online. So we're now kind of working towards that. But was there anything that I missed, Nick? Do you think that there was?
Yeah, really. I mean, we just put ourselves in situations where you couldn't fail, right? You didn't have any option. When it was we had that 600,000 requirement, we did that with our third partner, and our third partner did 300,000 of it. Well, 3 months before the summer, he left. So we only done prior like 300,000 before that. So we really had to just go out there and find people to help us and you know, recruit college students for this internship program. And that's what we did. We ended up doing 1.2 million that summer with 10 guys, which was unbelievable, something we've never done before, just because it was like you didn't have the option to fail.
Mm-hmm. And then we actually turned those 8 guys, 5 came back, and then we built to 150 sales reps the following summer from the 5 dudes. So it was
and that's all selling Hawks Pest Control.
So that was actually for Aruza. That's when we got equity. We then were with Aruza and we did the 1.2 million with the 8 guys that finished with Aruza. Then that following summer, we've been with Aruza since then. We were towards the beginning of when it was founded. We didn't realize it at the time, but it was a pretty small company. I mean, they were scrapping together the money to even pay us because we were throwing on so many accounts. Something you don't know, right? Like when you're actually doing it. I mean, we had no clue that was happening kind of on the back burner. We were still young college students. Fast forward 3 years, we ended up doing, 1 to 2 million in that branch. And then we actually sold our equity to that branch for over 7 figures by the time about a year after we graduated college.
And you guys are how old now?
So I just turned 25
and I'm 26.
Lovely. And so this is recent.
Yes, that happened actually when I was 23 and he was
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. So are you guys now still with Aruza?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we rolled in half of our equity earnings back into the business. We took half, invested out of the places, and now we're just growing. Obviously, the internship program, best that we can, up to like 200 reps at this point. So we're kind of just pushing that number further and further.
Yeah, private equity company purchased us to kind of inject more capital, just help it grow.
Mm. And are those 200 reps, are they all specific to Texas or are they all over the country or what's the deal with that?
They're all over the country. Yeah. So the way the internship program works is, and we feel a lot of purpose about it. It's deeper than just making money. It's like students genuinely don't have the communication skills, especially in the day and age that we're living in now. Like there's like a loneliness epidemic where people aren't actually going out and communicating. And I'm like, we're putting students in an environment where they're going to learn how to push through fears, because socially, I would say that's like the number one fear that people typically have. It's like the social aspect of what will hold someone back because they care so much what other people think. And I think it's on a spectrum. I think it's healthy to think to a certain degree, care what people think, but not to the extent that it holds you back from the things that you are trying to get or achieve. And so it's like we're teaching students how to navigate past the fear, right? Set the goal and know how to think correctly. So if they know what they're trying to chase, remove the fear from the equation, take action, even through the you know, like the perception of pain or the perception that you're feeling, the perception of emotion, to be able to reach like their goals. And so it's honestly, we're helping students like wire their brain kind of for success, I guess you'd call it. So success for what our definition is. Obviously people have different definitions, but.
What are the average students making?
That's a tough question, honestly, because students will come out and absolutely kill it. And then there'll be some that don't. And so we frame it super well from the get-go because we try to set the expectations. A lot of students will talk the talk, but they won't walk the walk. Door-to-door is super difficult. It's going to be super challenging. And you get what you put into it. But with the right skills and right work ethic, positive attitude, you know, staying on a mission, students, the average will make 15 to 20,000 their first year. On the lower end of that,
that's for 3 months, right? That's the summertime.
Yeah, that's for 3 months. But we'll have students that come out and make 5,000. But, you know, 5,000 is what they would have made, but then this 5,000 is a little bit more unique because it's coming with now a gallery of skills that you didn't have. And it's equipping you with skills that are going to take you much further than any other really internship program. Like, it's a high ROI skill that you're learning. So I'm like, the money, to be honest, that's a cherry on top.
So is that the pitch, that it's decent money and you're going to learn skills that are going to serve you for the rest of your life?
Yeah. I mean, if they focus, for me, the way that I've always operated, the way that I've framed my mind is, if I focus on the right things and the process and the actions, I can measure my success to that, and the results just come on their own. And so that's the way we frame it to all the students, that they're thinking the right way. So we don't coach them to think of result, then process. Because when they're not having a good day, what's going to happen is they're going to feel like they're failing, but they're just too zoomed in on that day. Like, they have to learn how to reframe the situation, zoom out into like a week or a month or a 6 month time span. And instead of embodying what it means to be a failure, you're just failing today. And so it's like, it's also teaching reframes and stuff like that.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I've spent a lifetime in sales myself, mm-hmm. coming from an extremely poor background. I look back and there's nothing that I would say comes close to having learned sales and persuasion and influence early on, mm-hmm. and its leverage of success in my life. There's nothing. And I think that every single kid in school should be put through extensive sales and influence and communication courses. I think that's the core foundation of what they need to learn, not the nonsense that they're learning. You know, they still got kids learning algebra. Mm-hmm. And my response to that is, you will never use that information unless you're an algebra teacher. You'll probably seldom even use simple math anymore. I mean, we should know simple math, but I don't use simple math anymore. If I've got a complex equation, I don't sit there and do long form. I just put it into the calculator and say, what's the answer? And so, you know, when you get back down to it, at my seminars, I teach people the number one, by far, wealth building skill is influence. So back to that. And if I'm overstepping my boundaries, let me know. I was excited to get you guys on here in the prayer that you just be able to be raw and real and talk about it. What are you guys earning now? You've been into the deal, what, 4 years?
So, yeah, you can go.
I would say we're earning money two ways. There's the equity side, which is kind of like in the background, which we're probably making somewhere between 200 to 500,000. That kind of increases more year over year as it compounds. Mm-hmm. And then actual like commissions, cash, somewhere between 100 to 200,000.
And that's collectively or between the two of you or?
No, that's separate.
Yeah. Each.
Got it.
That's separate. So right now, yeah, we just have our money in, cause yeah, we have the money that's actually inside. That's probably doubling right now. It doubled in a year and a half. And so we're expecting about every year and a half it's doubling. So hopefully till the exit, but at the end of the day, we don't have a lot of control over that. It's more trying to run a healthy business, keep growing it, you know, hope and pray, have faith that it is going to go well.
Yeah. So how I understand how you recruited people at your own school. Now mm-hmm. that you've got people all over the country, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we're kind of tapping into online. So like one thing that we're trying to focus on right now, it's because we're trying to almost build coursework of all the things that we've learned, bundle it up, market it online, and they can either buy the coursework or we have something that can teach you all the skills that you get the coursework for free and then you go out and sell. So I think that's an idea that we're currently trying to build out to get people online. We use different job hiring platforms, right? Like Handshake, LinkedIn, I mean, all those different platforms to recruit. So we're starting to get into that. But to be honest, I mean, that's something that I've talked with Nick that we're not as much well versed in online stuff because we're raw. Like door to door is about as raw as it gets. And so what we're doing now is we're trying to take our now old skills, I would always say. I mean, the skills that we've done for the past 7-8 years, perfecting the craft the best that we can and then bring that to online.
Yeah, preach it, old man. Mm-hmm. The thing that I believe is that again, people don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And for you guys, you're absolutely right. You guys have learned and mastered the craft that's hardest inside of sales. It doesn't matter whether it's car sales or real estate sale. It doesn't matter. MLM, knocking on doors is the hardest. And so when you master that, man, the world's your oyster. And I don't think people realize this. If you go to any major city in the United States, probably worldwide, but if you go to any major city in the U.S. and you go to the help wanted ads, there are never ending ads available for commission only salespeople. And so anybody that says they can't get a job, number one, either hasn't opened up a newspaper or more than likely just flat out doesn't want a sales job, and particularly a commission only sales job. I'm a speaker and a trainer by trade. That's what I do for a living.
Yeah.
The base of it, though, I'm a salesperson. I stopped seeking speaking fees a long time ago when I realized I could earn a whole lot more money waiving my speaking fee and simply making an offer from the platform. I said, no, you know, if I'm Tony Robbins, you're going to pay me $250,000 to be on your stage, but put Marshall Silver on the same stage. And although I'm not guaranteed anything up front, I'm going to make $2 million on that stage. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing that a lot of people just don't get. I believe in sales so much that along the lines of what you're doing, we're launching a sales training program. It's a 4-day, 8-hour-a-day course, all designed to teach people all kinds of sales. Telephone sales, door-to-door sales, MLM, whatever it is that they, high ticket sales, whatever they want to learn how to sell, we want to teach them, because I believe that's what's going to save the economy. You know, beyond the money, my own personal belief is that's what moves the needle. And the training will be free, and this is something for you guys to ponder, except it's going to have a $495 deposit required. And should anybody give us grief about that, we say it's real simple. We don't want you wasting our time and doing a half day of training. So either commit to taking it seriously or don't take it. Don't waste our time. Don't waste our space. Don't waste your time. Take the 4 days of training. All you got to, you don't even have to take a single note. You just have to be physically present. And if you're physically present during that whole time, if it's on a Zoom, if we can see your face for 90% of the presentation, you know, sure, you grabbed a sandwich or you went to pee, but if you just turned your camera off, I'm sorry, you forfeited your deposit. If you take 2 days of the live and you walk away, you forfeited your deposit. Finish the whole program and you'll get your deposit back. Because then obviously for an organization like you or the kind of stuff that we do, the people that complete the course are probably candidates. So, and we, I believe, because it's human nature, we're probably going to see about a 50% breakage. 50% of people that put down their 495 don't complete the course, you know, because that's human nature. Well, yep. We're okay now. Then we, you know, we just made $250 per free person we put in the course. So our costs are covered on the front end, but our training on the back end was also free, meaning we got those people for free. And if we can't use them, we just place them. And so I think that again, sometimes people, I'm not doing this to give you guys advice. You remind me of myself when I was in my early and mid 20s. And one of the things that I believe is that we have to stop and ask ourselves, where is my currency? And as you guys know, there's boatloads of people out in the marketplace teaching people online marketing. There's, you know, I'll scroll past, and I'm not even on the social media all day, I'll scroll past 100 ads for people teaching me how to market online today. And they're everywhere. Teaching people how to build door-to-door teams, that's different. That's more valuable, frankly, to you guys than you ever learning online marketing. So for whatever it's worth. So with that in mind, what are your next steps? Where are you guys going from here?
I think something we're getting into now is personal brands. So for example, on Instagram, we've started putting out like reels, more content, and then following a lot of other people in the door-to-door space. Cause it's one thing to, you know, find new talent and build them up personally. But once you get to a certain level of success, you can actually start driving over other high producers from other companies. So one of our biggest values at our company is just trust and transparency, right? We are going to pay everything that people deserve. And that's something that you just don't see a lot in some companies when it comes to like not completing contracts, stuff like that. So what happens is you start building this personal brand of trust and transparency. This is the company to be at. You start following all these other people at all these other companies. And at one point, those companies are going to slip up and that person's not going to have a good experience. Well, guess what? The person that they've been viewing and seeing from another company, they're probably going to reach out to that person. So I've started driving over more people from other companies that already have the skills that are already built to then run teams, throw on more revenue from here. So that's kind of the next step that we're getting into. It's just more into that personal brand and the value behind that.
So are you guys thinking that you're going to blow up your own personal brands, or is that approach to the social media so that you can find other customers? Do you have a non-compete with Aruza? You know, where are you guys going? Obviously, you want to protect your equity stake. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to ask, just out of curiosity, is the equity stake in the form of handcuffs? Meaning if you leave, do you lose your equity?
So no, we can take the equity with us. We can, but that's something that I'm still learning and trying to work towards to understand contracts. Right. Cause that's
send it over here. Cause I've seen a billion. I'll be happy to tell you not to sign the one the first people offered to you, by the way. But,
I would be interested to do that, because the situation is, because I've always talked to Nick, is I'm like, the way I look at it, so we've invested into real estate and some smaller amounts in different assets. Our biggest asset, I would say, is in private equity within the Aruza brand. But the way I look at it is, I'm like, that's money that we move there to grow, assuming the company's going to grow. I'm like, our marketing company is actually something that's separate. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can build more margin with different opportunities. And so I'm not looking to lose out just because they're making me feel like I'm in the business. Cause I've gotten to the point where I think about it and I'm like, no, the equity in there is more to hold a feeling that I'm part of it. And so I'll take something that's not as lucrative because I'm part of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's
obviously the only challenge with equity in anything is its equity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We could leave, but obviously if we left, it would probably be in their interest to sell our equity back to us instead of participating in the continued growth from that point on, but we wouldn't just lose it.
Good. Well, that is a great thing. As you work with salespeople, what are the biggest challenges in helping salespeople ramp up? You know, you had a guy who came on board, was ready to quit after 3 days, and then he ends up being your top producer of that season. Something clicked. What was it that shifted in him?
I think the first thing is struggling. We don't want to be put in the position where we're convincing people that they want success. And that happens a lot with new sales reps. And we were wasting a lot of time with those. So that's something that we stepped away from. But a lot of the times it's closing. Like the guy Maverick referenced earlier, he bageled and got zero sales his first 3 days.
For those that are uninformed, bageled, it's round. It's a zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He went out his first 3 days and then we fixed one thing and he just started closing customers, get them to say yes or no. And
what did you fix?
He got 8 sales the next day.
What did you fix?
He
was putting
the customer to make a decision without asking for the sale. So he would give them all the information.
Wasn't being assumptive.
And then he would wait there. And then the customer would be like, I need to think about it or say whatever, right? They're not going to be like, sign me up. So he literally just started saying, you know, are you going to be here tomorrow? Yes. Perfect. My truck's out here tomorrow. Would the morning or afternoon work best?
Beautiful.
And he started.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. So what's the average ticket?
Oh, it's low ticket. It's going to be like $750.
And that's for the year.
Yep.
Yep. Good. Mm-hmm. And do most customers pay for the year in advance or do they pay monthly?
They can pay in full, but most of the time they're paying monthly.
Very cool. How do you think, do your salespeople going door to door, closing on these pest control contracts, do they ask for referrals? Do they ask what the neighbor's name is? And hey, is there anybody around here that, you know, you think I should talk to?
They do, but not because we coach them to do it. I think we could do better at that. they do it naturally. If a customer is like, hey, can this person, do you guys do referrals? Obviously, yes. Some of them have started to coach themselves, like, I should do referrals, but it's not something that we've actually built into the training program, because that was never something that I did a lot. So I think that's also a place where I can shift. And that's, no, that's a good thought. And I should, we should probably bring that up more.
And as you said that as you recruit people, what is the training program for the people that you bring into Aruza?
So we actually built one out. So we built it like a door-to-door sales training course. So for all the rookies that come in, because we were thinking of points of leverage as well, right? Like, we have all the information. Do we need to spit it out a million different times to people? Or can we centralize the information? They can access it on their own, go through it, learn the skills. And then as long as we coach the leadership to do the best that they can. And I think also, yeah, it's like coaching leaders to be leaders, you know, like if they can figure it out on their own and kind of be a spitting image of kind of what we are, or even, you know, just become their best possible version. Then I'm like, a lot of times you can create that, then they're going to build their own organization. And I think that's a kind of a point of leverage too.
Yeah. And the step-by-step that we teach them is you need to learn this pitch. It's like a page long, word for word. Cause when you get in front of someone, you're going to blank and forget it all. Right. So you need to fall to the word to word. Then we teach them body language, how to look like a confident person, even when you're not. Mm-hmm. Then we teach them down tones, which is just like having credibility, confidence, sounding like an expert when you're talking, compared to most new salespeople start uptoning. And what uptoning is everything sounds like a question. But when everything sounds like a question, you sound super unconfident. No one's going to buy from you. And then covering objections, closing, filling out the information, getting the sale. But definitely the word for words, body language, nonverbals, paraverbals, tones, things like that, most important.
So when somebody comes, you recruit somebody, they come to train with you, you put them in the training program. Am I hearing that the training program is delivered remotely? You say, go access these modules and take this training. And do you guys have it set up as an online course already?
Yep. Yeah. So, but they'll all meet up like in their branches where they're actually going to sell. But yeah, we have it remote right now because it's just during the summer. So a lot of the college students are in classes. And so it's like, hey, here's this training course. You guys work through it at your pace and we can check from the top. But that's actually something new that we built out this year. So it's kind of like in a pilot program. But
is there a reason it's only during the summer, or is it just because the people that you're recruiting are in school?
Most of the time it's because they're in school. And the bugs are out most of the time during the summer is when people are emotionally seeing the ants. You'll notice after a big rain, we're like, the guys are going to sell well today because after it rains, people typically see a lot more bugs. People will go off. So that's when we started to realize, I'm like, yeah, people actually seeing the problem at hand, they're going to be a lot more emotionally driven to make a choice to actually buy, you know, when it's a little bit more prevalent in their life.
So, you know, roofers, they pray for hurricanes. They like hurricanes. They pray for them. You guys pray for bugs?
Yeah. Sales. We pray for it.
Do you guys carry around little canisters of cockroaches maybe just to, for a little extra emphasis?
No, but I've been accused of putting ants in someone's mailbox.
I was watching the Padre game the other day and they had to pause the game because of bees. And then the Diamondbacks had to actually postpone the whole game because they couldn't get rid of bees by home plate. And you know, again, had I known you guys were around, I'd have said, you got to talk to Maverick and Nick. They're going to take
care of us. Get us out there.
Yeah, seriously.
Does one of the things that I believe in is much like Amazon. Once you have a customer, you say, what else can I sell to this customer? So I think about the strategy, not only one to many, I think about the strategy, how can I be all things to all people? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like Amazon starts off selling books, fails miserably. Then they make the move to sell everything and, you know, massive success. I see that consistently across the board that people don't realize that the cost of acquisition, the cost of getting the customer is the biggest cost. And once you have a happy customer, it doesn't matter what they're happy about. If they're happy that they don't see ants, then they're going to trust you at least to have a conversation that says, hey, by the way, you need to clean your air conditioning units. Do you guys have the data from your salespeople? Is that 100% Aruza's personal property? Or do you guys think about, gosh, what else could we sell these homeowners that we have this amazing relationship with? Because I'm guessing the majority of the people that buy your services are homeowners, not renters, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah, they're homeowners.
And that demographic has already demonstrated financial responsibility. At the very least, they own their house.
Yeah. So we don't own that property. We do participate in the upside of upselling them because we have such a large proportion of equity in the entire company.
How much equity do you guys have?
Sitting right now, probably, I think it was like a little less than $1 million. But for upsells, right, the sales reps, they obviously get paid the most because they are acquiring the customers. And they're generally selling quarterly or bi-monthly pest control, hopefully adding mosquito control on there, which is a separate contract. And they have the ability to sell termites, but they're generally not able to close on as many of those. Then the technician goes out there, and the technician will try to upsell
them. Bite of the apple.
Exactly. Try to upsell them on termites, et cetera. We've got campaigns going, trying to upsell them on these stuff. And then we also do like moisture barriers, which are like $20,000 jobs and crawl spaces. And in other home services like that.
But we're not direct. Him and I aren't directly getting things from that. I mean, the business is. So it's like we have talked about how can we build deeper rather than so wide? Because right now the strategy has been build super wide with more salespeople. But I've had the same thought as I'm like, we get people in the door, you can upsell them on the termite. That's the big thing. That's the big money maker because it's a lot for the company as well because they'll retain, right? They're paying monthly just for us to come check and there's no cost after it's already installed. So building out more like a setter closer program for that, but haven't done that yet. Marsh, are you asking a lot of good questions though?
Hey, I'm here to serve, baby.
Yeah, that's good.
You guys are in your mid 20s. What do you envision in 10 years?
We exit this company, with a buku amount of money, we make a good amount of money along the way, build a massive organization, probably get into something with, I don't know, it's a weird dynamic of like dealing with people creates a lot of people just have a lot of problems, right? And it's a lot of stress dealing with them. So moving towards something where you're not dealing with as many people, creating another business, in 10 years, or I mean, starting our own pest control business and doing what we already know, but maximizing that.
Or maybe even just leveraging your whole machine and selling higher ticket things with bigger margins and bigger profits. So all great stuff. You guys sound like you got the world on a string right now. Good place to be. Before I wrap up, I always like asking some personal questions. You guys are the first two-party guests that we've had on the show since we launched about a month and a half ago. I want to ask you first, Maverick, what's your number one, what I call Achilles heel? What's the one thing you say, man, I personally have to work on this area.
Yeah, that's good. It's going to be. Trusting my decisions quicker with more confidence.
Good. Even the decision of deciding which it was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's good. I get it. And I think that that's such a powerful thing that, you know, I teach my kids. I've got three kids. I've got a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 9-year-old. And one of the hardest lessons to teach a kid, and I wasn't taught it, is how to lose. How to stand up, swing the bat, and realize I'm okay with swinging and missing. I'm not okay with not swinging. Yep. And again, it's that decision-making process happening quickly, even when we know there's a chance of losing, because there's always a chance of losing. How about you, Nick? What's the Achilles heel? What's the one skill set you say, man, I got to master this. It'll make a difference.
I would say being able to hold the line and like draw the line with people in like a positive way, right? Because you're put in the position where people are always asking you for stuff, but you right? You want them to be taken care of. You want them to feel great. But you have to like, you know, draw a line in the sand and like, this is the boundary you can't cross. And presenting that in a way where, you know, it's not going to create some sort of animosity. That and then just perfectionism, right? Sometimes I can spend too much time on a task that doesn't have a huge return just because I want it to be perfect, right?
All right. So I asked you about the Achilles heels. Fair enough. What are your top two qualities? What do you suppose? You got a lot of young people watching the show right now. They're eager, they're excited, they're motivated, and they're lost. And I'm sure you guys encounter a lot of these people coming out of college or even in college. They just don't know where they want to go. What are your top two qualities?
I feel a lot of peace, which allows me to have a clear mind, clear vision of where I'm going. So things aren't super mucky in my brain. I feel like it would be vision, which I know is like, it's like abstract to be like, hey, this is a quality to, you know, almost even explain to someone how to get there. But yeah, I naturally just feel at peace. There's not a lot of noise. I can stay true to the actions that I need to take. And the second one, I would say, is it just a burning desire to just constantly reach, you know, the next level, but at the same time feeling peace about it. It's not for me. You can probably tell in the conversation with Nick and I, we always joke around about it. I'm the why and he's like the what, how it gets done. Cause for me, yeah, it's strong vision and peace.
Good. How about you, Nick? Top two qualities that have allowed you to have the success you have right now?
Yeah. I think one of them is being able to remain positive in any situation, right? Because life is going to happen to you and it's, you know, 90% how you react to it. And no matter what's happening, if I'm having the worst day, like I just went out there and had zero sales, I'll still remain positive and I'll be able to look myself in the mirror and be like, this is one of my favorite days because I finished this day and I worked my hardest and I know that I just didn't quit. Right. So no matter what hardship is going on, I'm just going to keep an upbeat spirit. And then probably getting like being task oriented of just getting stuff done. I heard of Darren Daly that Maverick showed me. It was called Spark Speed. Right. If something that needs to be done, you don't wait around and have some anxiety and procrastinate it. I immediately just knock it out and move on. So I don't have some huge overwhelming thing over my head that's bearing me down.
Just making choices quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So while you guys are different, you're not. Good job. That's a good partnership.
Yeah.
Any last thing you want to share with my audience before we wrap up for the day? By the way, I love this. And I want to chat with you guys off camera. I want to chat with you guys. I've got some insights I think that would be very useful to you, plus some things I want to ask you about what you've done, because obviously building this sales organization, 200 people strong, all from, in due respect, probably one of the tougher markets, college kids, is a major accomplishment. My accolades to you. Any last things you want to share with the audience before we wrap up? Any place they can get a hold of you if they maybe want to come work for you this summer? How do they do that?
Yeah. Shoot us. Best place would honestly be a DM on Instagram. So for me, Maverick_Lopez. And then, yeah, there we go.
That's for Nick. There we go. Nick J. Yeah,
that's Sterling Silver on the ball. That's what that is.
Yeah, you're on top of it, man.
Yeah, reach out. We're hiring.
Yeah.
Awesome, gentlemen. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. You are awesome. And enjoy Texas. I look forward to meeting you in person soon.
Okay.
So much. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Awesome stuff. It doesn't matter whether you are 5 or 95 or anything in the middle, it's not too late to get started. And yes, I would echo that part of the success in your life will be determined by how quickly did you make decisions, not even good decisions. How quickly did you make any decision? Figure out whether the decision was effective or ineffective. And then how quickly do you adjust if it's not working the way that you want it to? Let your yes be yes. Let your no be no. You can always change your mind. In fact, you're probably going to, so you might as well get going on the decision right now. I'm Marshall Silver. You are totally loved. Make it an absolutely awesome day, and I'll see you on the next episode of Marshall Silver Live.